You're tuned in to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
You're listening to the DC Public Library on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Lion Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Good afternoon. I am your host, Ray Barker, with Special Collections at the DC Public Library. I'm joined today by Irene Kellogg, live in the studio. Today we'll start with a live segment, a brief interview, talking through a collection acquisition that the library recently acquired, and then transition into a pre-recorded interview with a guest and come back and sort of comment on that conversation. So what preceded my invitation to Irene being here today was a random phone call, but we'll get to that. Irene, do you want to tell us who you are?
All righty. Thank you, Ray, for having me. I'm a native Washingtonian. I was educated in the public schools. I attended Howard University, Federal City College, and the University of the District of Columbia.
Right, and can you tell us a little bit about the interview that we have coming up was with Pat Fletcher, and we can dive into that a little bit. Can you tell us how you met Pat and her father, Edward Fletcher?
Well, let me go back and finish by saying that as a student at the University of the District of Columbia, I was required to take a course in photography, and I wanted to hurry up and get that course out of the way. And the professors, at least one of the professors named Joseph Tex Gathings, knew of my frustration with trying to get this photography course out of the way. And he told me, you know what? You need to go to Photograph Camera Club. They've got some fantastic photographers there. Maybe they can help you. So I said, okay. And I went to the Anthony Bowen YMCA at 1816 12th Street Northwest, and that night I met some venerable old photographers. Of course, I was, you know, a youngster.
And this was in the 80s?
78 is when I joined this club. So that's what I did. I met them, and I stayed, and I love them all. One of the photographers was Ed Fletcher, that stood out in memory. There were many others, but since we're focusing on him, I'll try to stick with how he came to be a great mentor, just a kind man, very knowledgeable, and he taught me how to see and to question, why am I taking this photograph?
Yeah, and this is largely a black organization that met every couple of weeks at the Y, and Edward started this.
Yes, Ed was one of the founders of that club. There were others, John Enoch, John H. Pinkard Jr., Mel Hendry, Scurlock. There are many others that were part of the beginnings of that club. But Ed was the one who got membership going.
Around 1938 it started, correct?
37 was the date that they single out as the date that it was established because of a photo contest that they had of the Langston Terrace Public Works apartment back in 37. So that picture sort of sets the date as to when this photo club at the Y was established. So in 1940 is when they got their constitution and all the things that clubs need to do to say we're official.
And then you met Pat, his daughter, his only child, sometime around that time?
Yeah. No, I met Pat, in 78, much later, maybe 79. And it happened that we were having a Christmas party, potluck, Christmas party. And one of the dishes that was on the table was jambalaya. And I was so thrilled to get that, other than turkey, you know, as usual Christmas dinner or food. And I wanted to know, who made that? And Ed said, my daughter, Pat. So I had to get to know Pat because of that jambalaya.
So the friendship was born out of a jambalaya. Pat and I talk about this a little bit in the interview, the point of the club, some of the things you guys did and what.
Yeah, as I said, in those days, blacks did not have a meeting place, so to speak, or a group that would accept them, so they formed their own club. Now, the Y was open to, we didn't discriminate against anybody. In fact, there were one of the first presidents of the club was a white guy or Spanish. I don't remember his name, but we never discriminated. But it so happened that our group centered around photographers in the city who wanted to share their craft, and that's the way they grew.
Sure. And so Pat and I talk about this a little bit, about the club, about her father, about her role as a model for the mm-hmm. club. We'll hear more about that. And then can you tell everyone what led to you calling out? I mean, how did Pat introduce to you this notion of, I have my father's photographs? Ed is deceased. How can you provide some insight on how that became this collection of things that needed to find a home?
That's an interesting question. Like I said, we've been friends for a long time, talking, Skyping, and we would always discuss our junk, our photos, our stuff that we had to get rid of. And she was really pressed to get her father's things organized and maybe give them or donate them to some institution in Washington. And I happened to have seen during our conversations a brochure that DCPL put out, Special Collections, and they were asking for DC citizens to, you know, give us your stuff. We're interested in...
And we're still doing that, by the way.
We're interested in photo collections. And I went, let me check with Pat. So I told her, I'm going to call DC Public Library. And she said, yeah, go ahead. And I called, spoke with you, and I said, I'm going to send you a few pictures. And I sent you a picture that I had of Ed at 15th and U Street back in 1948 at the Capitol Classics. Mm-hmm. And Pearl Bailey and her husband, John Pinkett. And a classic photo of the 1940s group, about 10 people, black photographers sitting on a step with these old cameras. I think that sparked your attention.
It did, yeah. They were beautiful photographs. They're still hanging in where I work. Mm-hmm. And we have the actual photographs now in Special Collections. We'll talk more about that after the interview. But I just wanted to, we can transition into that now. I just want to make sure to keep things clear. This was a pre-recorded interview conducted February 15th. I flew out there to Tacoma, Washington. It's where Pat Fletcher, if you can keep track of this, had moved to be with her family in the early 90s. So the collection was out there. Irene called us and said, we want to donate this collection. Or we worked it out through correspondence with Pat from out in Washington State. And so Irene and I flew out there, independent of one another, arranged and organized the materials. And I was fortunate enough to be able to sit down with Pat and interview her about her father and the material. And keep in mind, while this conversation is going on, Irene is taking our photographs and our pictures, and Pat is not happy about it. But so if we could play that interview now, and we'll come back and talk a little bit more.
Pat, I just wanted to ask you a little bit about your time in D.C., like when and where you were born and what it was like growing up there at that time.
I was born in Washington, D.C. in 1941, May 1941, and grew up there first on someplace around Half Street Southeast.
Oh, in Southeast neighborhood?
Yeah.
Really?
And then moved to 3601 10th Street Northwest when I was about 4. And from there moved to 17th and Allison when I was about... I was in high school.
Okay, and that's Northwest?
Northwest.
17th and Allison, you said?
17th and Allison, oh, okay. Northwest. When I was in high school there.
And where did you go to high school?
I went to Immaculata High School, which used to be where American University now has a piece of its property on the Tenley Circle.
Oh, okay. Hmm. And you left D.C. when?
I left D.C. first when I went to college, to Barnard College. In 1958, mm-hmm. September 58, and was in and out of D.C. at George Washington University, a Catholic university, until I got married in 1962, September.
Okay. And so I'm here today, obviously, because we're looking through your father's collection of photographs, and I thought you could just tell us a little bit about your dad, about his time in Manassas, and his work as a freelance photographer.
Dad was born in Rappahannock County, Virginia, and spent most of his childhood in Prince William County, Virginia, near Thoroughfare, which is just west of Haymarket. He stayed in Virginia when the rest of his family moved north to New York City, and... He wound up going to, I can't think of the name of it.
That's okay.
Wasn't Nanny Burroughs School, certainly.
Yeah.
But the Prince William Educational Institution for, I've got it there, under the yearbook. Manassas Industrial and Vocational Institute.
Okay, so that was the high school?
That was the high school he went to.
And
he graduated in the class of 1931 and was on the football team there, baseball team manager, and got a scholarship to Howard University, but his last year at Manassas, he was working his way through high school as the janitor in training, so to speak, and he climbed on top of a washing machine he had just connected after fixing it, and his foot slipped and went through the wringer. It broke every bone in his right leg, and he wound up having to be on crutches at Freedman's Hospital for a couple of years.
So there went the sports
career.
There
went the sports career. And he thought he was going to... be at least the manager for the 4 years, but they told him they could only hold him as manager for 1 year.
Gotcha. Do you know when he developed his preference and his hobby and his for photography?
His photography was developed in high school.
Mm-hmm.
The photography teacher in high school was part of the industrial section of Manassas. And he took readily to it very quickly and began doing photography as soon as he got to D.C.
Mm-hmm. And then can we talk a little bit about him establishing the Photocraft Camera Club and then later your involvement in it?
Photocraft was my lifelong involvement. It was in 1938 ish. He and Mel Hendry, John Pinkard, John Enoch. And Herb Scurlock got together and put together a pro-am, professional and amateur photography club, with the idea of helping the kids at YMCA, or YWCA, I'd forgotten which one it was, set up a dark room and become photo pros themselves. The idea was to turn each amateur into a pro down the road. Mm-hmm. And they started the club and got going with it, and the Y supported them until the Y moved out and wound up at the church at the 16th Street Baptist Church, I think it is, or 14th Street Baptist Church on 16th Street Northwest.
And this was an all-black photo
this
club?
This was an all-black photo club.
Do we have a sense of how rare or unique that would have been in the, not just in the city, but in the country?
In the city and the country at that time, it would have been very unique, because there weren't that many, except in New York, Chicago, Baltimore, D.C., there weren't that many blacks who were involved in photography. And they would have worked their way through it by joining up together. Would have been the only way they could do it.
And it's still active today.
It is still active today. There is more of a pro club that is more active than they are. But in general...
So the professional photographers versus just people who are doing it as a hobby?
Versus people who are doing it as a hobby. And of course, at that point, they had Brownie cameras, the amateurs.
So they were cheap?
They were cheap. And the amateurs had the Brownies, and the they didn't have cell phones and things of that sort now, that they have now.
Not in the 1930s.
No.
And then so I just have a sample of photographs. You and I have been corresponding for the last 5 months, but... And when we first learned of the collection, our mutual friend Irene Kellogg sent us some samples. And I thought we could just walk through here and talk just a little bit about them. So what I printed out was in Maryland in 1936. Can you talk me through that a little
bit? Yeah, this was a... was an all-black jockeys... in the white steeplechase races. And the blacks were just written out of it completely because it was a white club that owned it. It was white owners that had the horses, and the blacks didn't get any credit at all for being in the steeplechase.
And then your father's assignment where it was to take pictures of those events for a newspaper?
For newspapers, for the Baltimore Afro-American, Pittsburgh Courier, and Chicago Defender, and there was one in New York, which I've forgotten the name of.
But in particular, so for this, he was assigned to take a picture, but were they published in the newspaper?
They were in the newspaper.
Right.
And if you notice in the picture... all of the black people are standing on the side, and they're at the most hazardous point in the race. So they got the worst seats, if you will, the standing seats.
Okay.
And the black jockeys got to jump the horses.
So what's out of frame there, or is the white audience?
Out of frame is the white audience.
And they're in the different section.
Yes.
The less dangerous.
Less
vulnerable.
Yes.
Seating. And then another one here, this looks like it's just an event, the Photocraft Club.
Yes. Every week, every 2 weeks, they would have a meeting. And one of the meetings was always a model session, where they would invite a model in, and they would give her pictures to for her portfolio, and they would have pictures for their portfolio also.
So a mutual agreement, the model gets work to take with him or her, to her probably, right, to share with anyone to get work, and then they have examples and learn the craft of taking
exactly pictures. And if you notice, in this picture there are two women who are not models, they're photographers, and in the first picture of the club there is one woman,
which is even more unique.
And she wound up marrying one of the other photographers.
Yeah, and I know that if I'm right reading Irene's biography, a lot of the family, it was a very much a family
kind very of much a family affair.
Yeah. And then I think we just have three more pictures to get through, and then we can move on. But I wanted to stop and ask about your role as a model. do you want to talk at all about that? Since we were talking about models, what did that look like for you as a kid?
Whenever my father got new paper, new film, you know, new type of film, new camera, new anything, I was his model. He would tell me, sit there, do this, do that, do the other.
And wear a particular dress.
And as a result, I got used to being ordered around by photographers all the time. My kids get very upset now because I hate having my picture taken.
I love it, though. It's not just being told what to do as a parent, but also as a photographer telling you what to
right.
do. So you have both. And then was that from like age very young to teens?
I don't remember the first time I got flash bulb burn.
And then just, I think, three more here. A photograph of who is that?
This is Pearl Bailey with her third husband, John Pinkett. He was an insurance broker in Washington, D.C.
And that's in their home. And she would have been a celebrity at that time.
She would have been a celebrity at that time. They're looking through to see which records she wants to go through.
Great. And then this is actually one of my favorites.
Oh, this is a Capitol classic. It was on U Street. The parade was on U Street. It would go from Howard down to about 16th Street. Uh-huh. And it had the fanciest cars.
And they're showing off the cars.
Which were the sponsors of the football game between Howard and the next team that came close to Howard.
So they just tie it up with the football game and just make it a big kind
right.
of deal.
And you can see there's a picture of one of the photographers here.
Who's from another media thing?
From another media group.
Who's also...
And you can see his big flashbulb shield.
And then, so how did the collection end up in your hands?
I am an only child. And one of my father's close friends in the photograph club had died, a couple of years before Daddy did. And Daddy went over to his house with one of his photographer friends. And they were going to offer their condolences and tell the widow that they would, you know, be happy to take care of her collection and to spread it around. And they got there in time to see her throwing the last of his prints into the bonfire that she had going in the backyard. And he was so shook by it, he came home and he made me and my mother promise that we would not do the same thing with his pictures.
Okay. And then so as the only child and as something of value to your parents, it just was handed down the way things get handed down.
I got all the boxes.
Right. And then when you moved, of course, they followed you.
They followed me. They came with me out here and I couldn't figure out what I wanted to do with them. Right. Thank you for coming to my rescue.
Well, thank you for reaching out to us. So, as you said, a lot of his work was typical of what any freelance photographer at the time and even now might cover, weddings and birthdays, other events like that. But you mentioned he was assigned to photograph and document lynchings in Northern Virginia and Maryland for area newspapers and the NAACP. So, and you had said in correspondence to me that these photos were likely published uncredited, and that your father developed these in the basement, his workspace, as he did all his photographs, but those in particular kept you, he kept behind closed doors, literally and figuratively. Can you talk to me a little bit about your impressions of that, or what that was like? Or
Daddy's studio was always, at least from the time I was four, in the basement. And he decorated it and had it set up for moms to come in and change clothes and get dressed and so forth. And on 10th Street, when we lived there, the front part of his basement was set up so that it could be a sleeping area for people who escaped Joe McCarthy, or as a area where the models would be in front of various backdrops that he had. He also had a large bathroom that he had set up with a vanity and a beautiful mural on the wall and so forth. In between the front and the back, he had his dark rooms, and he would, at first he used the used the basement as a kitchen, and he used that part as his dark room, and then he actually got a real dark room in the side section. The when Daddy would go down there, he would usually leave the upstairs door open. But sometimes he would go down there and he would close and lock the upstairs door. And it was always a shocker to me when I couldn't go down to the basement to see my father. But that was the time that I later learned he was doing lynchings.
And you didn't hear this from him, you heard this from someone?
I heard this from my mother. I did not hear it from him, no. He would go out there protected by his green, blue, or gray eyes, depending on what he wore that day.
And his coloring.
And his very white coloring. His red neck. We used to tease him all the time about his milk bottle legs when he came down the stairs in his Bermuda shorts. And, you know, I would go down, up and down the steps at will whenever he was home.
And then there was some impression from you about him, the effect on that it had on him?
Daddy, I don't think, ever recovered completely from seeing and taking pictures of those lynchings.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that. And still disturbing these many years later.
Yes, it is.
So, what do you think of your father's photographs as his daughter and as a photographer yourself, as a hobbyist and enthusiast? What do you think of his work?
I think his work is great. I would hate to have to think about the 40s, the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, without having them, because they've provided a real window to me into a time when I was just a young girl. I was going to high school, maybe, and not really aware of what kind of a life my relatives and ancestors lived.
Oh, just as documentation of how things were?
Exactly.
And what people did?
And what people did. And then look at the pictures and be amazed.
This last question is from our perspective, the library's perspective. So these materials remained in boxes and darkened closets, space and in basements since forever, and garages. And so once they're donated, and once, you know, we're going to, the idea here is process them, make them available to the world, I guess I like to say, or anyone with access to the internet.
Whoever wants to be.
Eventually. Yeah. So I said they've been kind of closed off and not available, and eventually they'll be the opposite of that and sort of widely available to anyone with the curiosity and the interest. So how does that feel to you?
That feels good to me. I am glad to have my father's work, his co-hobbyists, his co-professionals' work available to all Americans, especially, but to D.C.
That community
in particular. There are some wedding pictures in here. I do not know the names of the people. There are many pictures here where I do not know names and real information, but I do know that they deserve to be out in the open for everybody.
I do too. And through our process, we hopefully can identify some of those people. It's possible. And then, so are we able to speak about how your father, who I have to point out you still affectionately call Daddy, how he might respond to this notion? Was that, I mean, can we imagine the notion of the work is more available, or, you know, that history is out there?
He would be very happy. Very happy. It would, for both Mom and Daddy, history was the backbone of everything they did. And for them to see his pictures out in the open, shared with the whole world, is very, very critical.
Okay, I agree. Well, thank you. Thank you for the gift.
So that was my interview with Pat Fletcher in Tacoma, Washington. Her father was a D.C. photographer, and the Library Special Collections has acquired his collection. We'll talk more about that after that. After the break, you're listening to the D.C. Public Library on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Evans Morgan. Welcome back. This is Ray Barker, Special Collections in D.C. Public Library at the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan. You had just heard an interview with Pat Fletcher, who lives in Tacoma, Washington. As I said, her father was a D.C. photographer, established the Photocraft Camera Club, that's a photo with an F, in the late 30s, and his daughter ended up with the collection, and it followed her out there, out west. And summarizing things here, Irene Kellogg was her friend and knew Ed Fletcher. The collection has arrived safely. We were just going to walk, arrived safely in D.C. A week after we went there. And we were just going to walk everyone through what it looked like when we got there and sort of the work we did there and getting preparing it to come here and fill you in on the nature of what's in that collection and wrap things up. Irene, can you describe the scene for us in that room when I was conducting the interview with her and sort of what we did and what it looked like and what our goals were?
Well, prior to your coming, I was there the first the day before, and I was just overwhelmed with all of these boxes labeled, you know, with cryptic things, sometimes very explicit as to what the contents were. So I did start opening boxes and was discovering a plethora of stuff. I mean, slides, large prints in boxes, loose photographs, family outings. There was a picture of Joe Lewis, Nat Cole. There was an image of Roosevelt riding down Pennsylvania Avenue, waving his hand. I think that was in the 38, in the late 30s. It was just amazing. All of those images. I, I couldn't begin to. I was excited.
Yeah, and I got there. So the everything was spread out. It was the Pat's sons, Mike and Ted, fully grown men there, helping to kind of sort and organize what you might call as family photographs, just things that normal people have in their drawers of their families, and from the professional work of Ed Fletcher's, their grandfather, of course. Mm-hmm. And so that was sort of one of the big tasks there, was to sort of make that split. And then, you know, Irene was sort of running image by Pat to sort of get some more information about what was included in the photographs. So the total collection ended up being around 29 boxes.
Wow.
Went to FedEx office with her sons, packed those all up on a Friday afternoon, and came back to D.C. And as I said earlier, they all arrived safely a week later. And then next steps are really to unpack that and get a sense of what's there. And Irene is a volunteer in Special Collections now with us, and she's going to tackle that collection very soon. Was there anything else that we wanted to share?
Well, I just wanted to say that my motives for really pushing to go and or be a part of this with you, because I certainly could have stayed here in D.C. and let you handle everything, but I had some altruistic motives, because I too want to get my photo collection organized, and I wanted to share with my camera club members at Photograph and to the community at large how important it is to keep your legacy.
Yeah, and so next steps for me personally and for Irene, I'm showing up at one of her at the Photograph Camera Club meetings coming up here in a week. As we said, they still meet and they still share and they still learn together, and we're reaching out to other members to see if we can acquire
that. That's on the 15th at Woodridge Library.
Their collection. Yeah. So thank you, everyone, for listening today. This has been an episode of DC Public Library Notes from the Library on Full Service Radio. It's Ray Barker and Irene Kellogg, broadcasting live from the Lion Hotel in Adams Morgan. To learn more about the DC Public Library, please visit us at dclibrary.org or follow us on Twitter / Instagram at DCPL. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Have a good day.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts, covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.